You're tuning into the Active Mom Podcast with physical therapist, Dr. Carrie Pagliano, a real mom's guide to all things postpartum return to workouts after baby. If you're a postpartum mom, coach, trainer, or physical therapist looking for answers on how to get back to running, CrossFit, yoga, Pilates, HIIT, you name it, without the fear of pelvic floor issues or doing something wrong, this is the podcast for you. Let's start the show. All right. One of the biggest questions that I get from moms is, how am I supposed to get back to all this stuff when my baby is not sleeping? And that's when you call in somebody like Lexi, the baby sleep coach. She reached out recently and said, hey, I want to talk with your listeners about helping them out with getting your baby to sleep. And I said, yes, ma'am, sign me up. So Lexi, thanks for being on the Active Mom Postpartum Podcast.
Yes, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here and hopefully share my wisdom with all your mom followers.
Awesome. So tell us a little bit about who you are, where you are in the world, and kind of what got you into kind of coaching moms to help get their babies to sleep.
Yeah. So I am in Colorado, snowy, beautiful Colorado. I am a NICU nurse. I have been a nurse for about 6 years, not always in the NICU. I started out in home health pediatrics, always knew I wanted to be in the NICU. It just took me a little bit longer to get into an ICU. And then after I worked with a couple amazing families, worked closely with PT and OT and, you know, speech therapies, all that good stuff. For about 3.5 years, I followed with two families and their little girls, which was amazing. And then I met the love of my life. He was a rancher out in the eastern plains of Colorado. So that kind of took me away from my job as a home health pediatric nurse. And I worked in the prison system for a little less than a year. That was a cool, amazing experience. Learned a lot. Not a long-term career for me. And then I applied to get into the NICU in Denver, and it's been an awesome, amazing experience working closely with moms in the NICU. And my journey to become a sleep consultant, I got pregnant with my first kiddo. She turns one this weekend. I can't believe how
congrats.
Fast, thank you. How fast time has gone. So I've been having fun this week planning her birthday party. But when I was pregnant with her, I have always been somebody who just has always needed a lot of sleep. I don't know why my body has been that way, but my mom always tells me, even as a baby, I just wanted to be like in my crib sleeping. And even like through my adolescent years, I always had an early bedtime because if I don't get a lot of sleep, I get sick. So I was very scared to have a newborn baby and not get a lot of sleep and try and think that I'm going to be sick on top of trying to figure out new motherhood and all that good stuff. So I was determined not to be that quote unquote sleep deprived mom and have that be a normal thing in my life. So I was scrolling through all the mom blogs and, you know, buying all the sleep books so I could have early success with my baby. And I just found like there was so much information out on the internet. It was almost like a lot of it was kind of controversial, like you should do this, but then something else said, oh no, you shouldn't do that because of this reason. I couldn't really find like a lot of good solid evidence-based research on, you know, what I should do with my baby. It was kind of more just everyone's opinion. And so I also, working as a full-time mom, I wanted to cut back on that so I would have a little bit more time raising my kiddo and being more present and at home. That's just kind of what I always saw for my life as being a mom. So I wanted to start like a little side hustle and eventually grow it into a full-time business so I could be a stay-at-home working mom.
We love mompreneurs around here.
Yes, yes, right. And I stumbled across becoming a certified infant and toddler sleep coach, and it like immediately spoke to me. So that night I signed up for the certification course. It was all self-paced. I think I graduated in like 3 weeks. We did assignments and tests and had like a final project that we had to submit.
You were always an A student, weren't you? Yeah. You were that girl yes, that was just I was. Like, I am going to ace this.
Yes. Yes. That was not much of a procrastination. Get it done early and, you know, do my best. And then that was this last summer in May, or last, I guess it's 2024 now, last year in May. And ever since then, I have never looked back. I absolutely love helping people transform their lives. It's like sleep training your baby totally ripples into so much more 100%. Other areas
yeah.
of
yeah.
other people's lives. And they just don't yeah. really realize that until their baby is actually sleeping.
Yeah. So. I'm going to pause you right there. A lot to unpack. First of all, sure. I feel like anybody who works in the NICU, and I was very fortunate years ago to have some great colleagues at Georgetown University Hospital, PTs, OTs, I had clients who were in nursing staff. You all are amazing. We were fortunate never to have a NICU experience, but sure. those providers mm-hmm. are the bomb, because that's so incredibly stressful and you guys are just so supportive and so knowledgeable. So first of all, thank you for that, because sure. I think especially for first time parents.
Yeah.
That's very a lot. Scary. That's a yes. lot.
It's yeah. 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 You have like this perfect birth plan set up in your head and
yeah.
Parents just never imagine that their journey would look like them their baby in the NICU. So
no, not yeah. at all.
It's
I think
super hard
from a recovery perspective too. Like in this last year, I had a mom with triplets and she had one already at home. In addition to the triplets,
because
who plans triplets?
Right.
And it was so interesting because we were able to rehab a lot on the front end because the mm-hmm. kids weren't home yet.
Yes.
And so, sure. but that as soon as they came home, she's like, I'll see you later. Maybe yep. I'll pop up in a year. So.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. No time for, her own rehab.
The other thing that you said that I just was really excited about, and I think, again, your background as a NICU nurse is really important, is your collaboration with PT and OT. Mm-hmm. Because that is a thing with sleeping that and sleep coaching that I feel like needs to be talked about more.
Yeah.
And I was cracking up a little bit, understanding that my kids are a lot older than yours. Mm-hmm. I have a son who'll be 13 in a couple of weeks, and he did not sleep till he was 5. When I read in your bio, you're like, oh, I sleep trained my own child in a couple of weeks. And I'm just like, yeah, right.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and this is again, sarcastic mom with like, we didn't have resources like you back in the day. Mm-hmm. I read all the freaking books. Yeah. I did all the things. I listened to my friends who were like, oh, we'll just do this. And it was just like, no girl, this is not his jam. Yeah. And I have a colleague who actually lives in, oh my gosh, is she in Fort Collins? She goes, Laurel mm-hmm. Prue, she's a PT. And she was talking this year about, she just had her child, sleep mm-hmm. issues, and reflexes and primitive reflexes, and started to work with PT and OT and a sleep consultant. And I was like, dang, mm-hmm. I wish I had that 13 years ago. So can you go a little bit into kind of like what, first of all, like there's got to be like a variation of like sleep training, but like when do you know when it's like beyond the basic, because we're doing this for like me 13 years ago right now, because still have some PTSD from that.
Yeah.
All right. So go, but help 13 years ago me.
Right. Yes. So, I mean, we basically just have this basic assessment that the family kind of fills out, like a very detailed questionnaire. That's how I write my sleep plan for every single family. And it's always going to be different, obviously, because no two kids are the same. The way I know that we're having issues and my methods aren't working is things are just going haywire. If I know the parents are being committed and consistent to the method that we're using for their kiddo. And the baby is just not on the trajectory that they should be. I know that there's an issue, and part of my intake form is asking parents, like, if they're comfortable sharing, because as part of my job, I feel like I need to know, like, their previous medical history, and all that good stuff. So if there is, like, any sleep apnea, if they're breathing through their mouth instead of their nose, especially for babies, any of that good stuff, or if they had, like, almost a traumatic birth experience. Sometimes things like that can bring up sleep issues for these kids that the parents don't even know about. So that's kind of where I start dissecting. Mm-hmm. Is it me? Is it the method? Have we pivoted multiple times and still nothing is working? Mm-hmm. Let's kind of go down the medical route. And that's where I kind of feel like my background in the baby world kind of helps me a little bit more, helping families diagnose things that they just thought, oh, my kid just can't sleep.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. So
yeah.
It's difficult to, I would say, to diagnose those things. Mm-hmm. But you just, it's almost just like this feeling inside you, if like you've helped so many families, their sleep training journey with you has gone exactly as planned. And when you get those one or two cases that haven't gone as planned, you just have a little inkling inside of you and you're like, okay, maybe we need to look at something deeper than just the basic, my kid doesn't know how to fall asleep on their own. So that's kind of where I start.
With a typical kid, let's just say, you know, no issues that we know of, when should you start to see some patterns with sleep? Like, because, you know, my recollection of all of this is like, it's kind of a chit show, honestly, until maybe I started to see signs of a pattern, at least with my second, was closer to that like 8 week mark.
Sure.
Is that like, what's kind of a normal pattern to start to look for those things?
Yeah. I would say, like, do you mean like to get on a good sleep path?
I mean, even to, for somebody to consider, you know, that they need help. Because I feel like those first couple of weeks, you're still like, there can be digestive issues. There can be just like so much stuff going on.
Yes, yeah.
Like there can be a lot of stuff to kind of navigate. Like, when should you start to be like, hey, you know, my kids should be able to, this shouldn't be so hard.
Sure. Yes. Yeah. So I think it kind of depends on a few things. Like if your baby is, you know, co-sleeping for those first, you know, couple months of life, and they're used to being on a soft bed, and then you're trying to transition them to a firm flat mattress in a crib or a bassinet. So I think it depends on the habits that you've kind of created for, I hate to say it, for that baby. But I would say even a little bit later, like around 3 months, is when you should really start to see your baby kind of get the hang of being laid down in their crib, being on a firm flat mattress. Those first 2 weeks of having a newborn are, I tell parents all the time, it's survival mode.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then after that, you can really start laying healthy sleep foundations. Like, I want people to snuggle their baby and hold their baby. Cause you don't get those newborn, like, they grow out of their clothes so fast, and you want to hold that teeny tiny 7 pound baby, you know? So get those snuggles in, but then practice like once a day laying your baby down. Because when they are used to being held in squishy arms and then you go to lay them down on a hard mattress, they're not going to like it. So It really depends on how a parent is helping their baby build those healthy sleep foundations from the very beginning. But I would say, like, probably between the second and third month of life, they should really start seeing their baby if they're having, you know, independent sleep issues or if they're kind of going in the right direction.
Gotcha.
I hope that makes sense.
So if you have, not that I'm pulling from experience or anything. no, like I'm just thinking back. My husband was great. He would kind of handle my son at night and kind of take him down to the basement and get him calmed down. But he always, he was that kid that it would take 40 minutes to go down for like a 20 minute disaster nap.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to be able to, you know, he's almost 13. I the kid's been on brand. I'm going to give him props for that. Also had, you know, some primal reflex issues that we figured out later on. But like, as a mom, and you know your kid can't self-soothe is too simple, but like they need like tactile support to calm their nervous systems. But like you and I can have this conversation and be like, oh, it's their nervous system. It's immature, that sort of thing. How does a mom know when their gut is like, no, they need me to do this. Yeah. I am trying to put them down. I am swaddling. I am doing all the things, but my kid is red face freaking crying. And this doesn't feel right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like how do you even know kind of where to start? And how do you find somebody who's like a sleep coach that's gonna be a good fit for your family?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great question. I think a lot of it comes with finding that sleep coach, doing your research, and finding the coach who is going to meet you where you're at and what you're comfortable with. A lot, I meet a lot of parents who check the one question on my intake form. I can't handle any sort of crying. Like it just sends them. That's probably the biggest question that I need checked is, can you handle some crying?
Yeah.
I don't mind hearing any crying or some crying, but a lot of parents will check. It just sends them into like their stress level increases when their baby is crying.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously the baby can feel it when a parent is stressed. So that is one huge thing that I meet parents where they're at. And if their baby needs to be rocked, if they're used to being rocked to sleep for 40 minutes, then we are gradually very, very slowly getting that baby used to just sitting in the rocking chair. Mm-hmm. Or instead of rocking, we're walking around the room. They still need like some type of motion. We're just switching that motion gradually, taking the Band-Aid off. We're not going to rip it off because a lot of babies that young still need very, very hands-on support because they're not mature enough to self-soothe.
Right.
And their neurological system just isn't where it needs to be to be like, oh, mom isn't going to rock me. Okay, I guess I'll just go to sleep. Like, that's not how their mind works.
They're no, God, no. But
they're going to be frantic.
Yep.
Until they get that motion that they need or, you know, bouncing on a yoga ball. Let's do some other type of motion to help this baby fall asleep. And then we can gradually, in intervals, take away that motion and help them fall asleep in a still manner. And then transfer that to the crib or bassinet.
Yeah. And I think that's a tricky one too, because I know so many people that were like, all right, we're willing to deal with the crying.
Yeah.
If it means that, you know, in a couple of days or a week or that sort of thing. And I remember very much going through like, okay, we'll just do a little bit here, that gradual approach. And in the rear view, obviously, it's a lot easier to see. We definitely needed, you know, some more help on that sort of thing. But like, at what point in that process too, should, like, how long should that take? And I know that's an awful question because every kid is different. But like, what are the indicators where you're like, you know what, you do need to talk. You need to pull in an OT or somebody that's going to be able to help you navigate some of these other issues that, if they are navigated, might help everybody, including you as a sleep coach. Like, what are the indicators, red flags, where you're like, whoa, we need help.
Yeah. If we're really not making a whole lot of progress I work with families for 2 weeks, which is not a very long time. So we're really getting to work, getting down and dirty, doing, you know, committing every single day, every minute of every day to work on your baby's sleep. So if things aren't great by the end of 2 weeks, I'll tack on another week. And if it's still not great, then that's my red flag of saying, okay, this baby isn't progressing the way we need to.
Yeah.
Again, we need to look at different factors that's going on here and bring in other professionals, whether that's a PT, OT, getting chiropractic care for the baby, what have you. Are we maybe a lactation consultant, all that good stuff to help this family, because there's something deeper going on.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where, I mean, I feel like us as pelvic floor PTs, because we're accessing moms far sooner. So I'll see moms usually anywhere between 2 to 4 weeks postpartum. So we go really early, knowing that things should start to kind of be easier. But mom's really clinging to, I can't put my kid down, period.
Yes, the Velcro baby. That's what I call it.
And, you know, I think it's one thing where maybe like an afternoon nap, you can't put them down. Like I watched a million episodes of Mad Men with my oldest. that hasn't played out yet, which is great. thank God it hasn't affected them. But like, we had certain naps that were definitely harder than others. And I think that's pseudo normal, but like when every single and then moms are trying to get these workouts in and you know, things like that, and they have no stress relief because that kid is just on them 24/7.
Yes.
That's where I'm like, okay, we need to get this figured out, because if you're not getting sleep, if you're not getting this time separated from them, like, workout is not the focus right now. And so that's where I feel like we can be really kind of helpful and collaborative with you guys, being like, okay, that's a priority. Go deal with that first and then come back and find me, because there's no way you're going to get a workout in if you can't put this kid down fault of your own.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And you're like, in order for a mom's body postpartum to heal, they need rest and sleep too. And if that's not happening, then they're not going to a pelvic floor therapist, they're probably not, correct me if I'm wrong, not going to see results like and healing in their body as quickly as, you know, a mom who's getting those good 2, 3, 4 hour stretches at night.
It's also going to stress them out because it's just one more thing that they suck at.
Yes. Yes.
So, and the self guilt is real.
Yes. Oh my gosh. It totally is. Yes. Yes.
So when you guys are, when you're kind of tackling, let's say it's a kid that has a problem with naps and nighttime, again, not from previous experience at all. what will you go after first if the parent has no preference? Like, is it better to go? Okay.
Yep.
And why is that?
It's just nighttime is easier. The progression of it sounds backwards.
I would argue at 2 a.m.
Yeah.
I'm like, I am not at my best self right now.
Right. Yes. Yes. You have that sleep pressure is built up at night. It's the progression of the easiest from hardest for a baby to sleep is they can conquer a full night of sleep. So I'm talking 10 to 12 hours of straight nighttime sleep before they conquer every single 3 or 4 nap of the day.
Okay, I'm going to pause you 1 second because I need you to unpack a myth here that I remember of the quote, does your baby, quote, sleep through the night? And I read somewhere that technically a newborn sleeping through the night is only 5 hours. Is that true?
How old are we talking? Like, I would say like
6 weeks or younger.
6 weeks or younger, I would say.
Like, what's sleeping through the night at that point? Yeah.
Probably 6 hours. A good rule of thumb that I like to use for families is if they're medically stable, if their weight is at a good spot, if they're like, if mom's milk supply is in a good place too, if they're 4 weeks, they can get at least 4 hours, not at least, but at most 4 hour stretches. If they're 5 weeks, we can maybe work to a 5 hour stretch.
Gotcha.
That's not true for every single baby. That's just a average rule of thumb. So if your baby is more or less than average, that's totally normal. Just want to throw that out there.
So that's where I feel like we need a heads up on the terminology, because I remember going into that and people like, oh, my baby sleeps through the night. And I wanted to give him like two big middle fingers up because in my head, I'm thinking 8 to 10 hours, which that by definition, I don't think is actually true. Like, I could have digested, and that probably didn't help with my mental health very much, thinking these kids are sleeping all the way through the night. And really, it was only like 5 hours, which again, I totally would have paid for at that point. But be clear with the terminology and the expectations up front. Yes. So we're setting our moms up to not like hate themselves.
Right. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Sleeping through the night at 6 weeks, if your baby's getting a 6 hour stretch, that's great. But then after that, they're not going to get another 6 hour stretch.
No. So
you get one big, long 6 hour stretch. And then after that, their bodies go back into, okay, I'm going to eat every 2 to 3 hours. I think that's also, there just needs to be clarification. Yeah. Like you said, around what sleeping through the night means, how old your baby is, what's appropriate for that age group. Yeah.
Okay. What for about, sure. And this always drove me nuts too, because it never happened. These moms that put their kids down for the night at like 6:30 PM at night versus like 11 at night.
Yeah.
Unpack that for me because that was always a confusion point.
Yes. So the sweet spot for babies 3 months and younger is between 8 and 10 PM. So when I'm working with a family, I work off of their schedule, and then we make kind of baby's routine and schedule off of there. So if they're not getting home from work till 7 and they're trying to rush and eat dinner, baby isn't going to go to bed at 8 o'clock, because you want to spend time with your baby after you're getting off of work. You want to have a nice family dinner. You might want to sit and watch a couple Netflix shows, then shower, you know, spend time with your hubby, then put baby down. So sweet spot, 3 months and younger, I always say 8 to 10 PM. And then it kind of creeps up, to like 7 to 8 PM. Once you kind of get into those older than, you know, 4 months old, toddlers, it depends on how many naps a toddler's taking. If you're down to one nap, bedtime might be a little bit later, like between 8 and 9. So it really just depends on, there's a whole lot that goes into what bedtime looks like. But for younger newborn babies, a later bedtime is totally normal.
Yeah. I think we got that Ren right on our second. I joke that she's the one that we actually did something right with. so we would put my son down first, and then I would put her down after that. So she would be closer to like 10 o'clock. And then she would usually wake up. I think we'd get the end of like the late, late show or something like that. And do a feed there. And then, you know, sometime that 4:30, 4 o'clock, whatever. So
And it's like the parents aren't going, like, if, like, for me, I wanted to go to bed at 8 o'clock, just because that's always been
I do that MO. Now.
my kids
put me to bed.
So I wanted to go to bed at 8 o'clock, so I would put baby down knowing that it probably wouldn't be a long stretch of sleep that first little bit. And then after that, I would get a longer stretch of sleep, you know, in the middle of the night until early morning. So it all just really depends on your routine and schedule and what works best for the family.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier kind of digestive issues and things like that. Like how, I think that's another one that's really challenging and can, I think moms really aren't sure whether to talk to a lactation consultant or a sleep coach or both. And how do you kind of know whether, like, what are the signs that your kid isn't sleeping because of something related to like, that?
Yeah. Yeah. I would say, you know, like if you're having like a really colicky baby, they're spitting up, they're just not settling after a feed. That's kind of a huge sign. If they, even like an hour after a feed, if they're really fussy, that could be a sign of maybe your baby is a little bit colicky. If they're really gassy, if, you know, they don't have regular bowel movements, like a newborn baby is peeing and pooping almost every wet diaper. So if that isn't happening, I would pull in a lactation consultant for sure. And just kind of have them dissect with the family, like what's mom's diet? What is there any food allergies or, you know, anything like that, that the mom is having, or if they're in, or if there's any other kids who have food allergies in the family, maybe baby has it too, or, you know, like a milk intolerance, anything like that. Cause I have seen just in my nursing career, milk intolerances of these smaller babies. And mom's like, I'm eating healthy. I'm, you know, only eating my fruits and vegetables and all that, like I'm eating clean and all that good stuff. But there's still something in the milk that doesn't really help baby's stomach. So I would for sure pull in a lactation consultant. And then if there's any other kind of start with the basics and then go down our list of who else do we need to talk to.
Yeah. That's, I feel super lucky. I don't know if you know her on Instagram, the Balanced Boob. She was my neighbor, gosh, before we even got married.
Awesome. Yeah.
So we go way back. So if y'all are looking for somebody, Kelly is the bomb.
Yeah.
And she has a massive side of sarcasm, which why I love and appreciate love her. You know, it's funny too, the things that kind of flash back in your head. I was not, it sounds stupid in the rear view.
No.
I had a C-section with my first, unplanned. Perfect. Not comfortable. We would, middle of the night, would try and set my son up to do like side nursing so I could like rest a little bit and whatnot.
Yeah.
And we would both fall asleep.
Mm-hmm.
And then about 45 minutes later, guess who's all pissed off because he didn't get burped?
Yeah.
And I was of the mindset, we're like, oh no, we can totally skip this. For those of you that don't know, you cannot skip burping.
No.
They won't let you and suck it up because you've got to figure that out. I don't care if your kid falls asleep nursing, you need to wake their sorry little butts up and burp them or they will wake for you.
Yes. Yes. It will be so uncomfortable for them to have that big gas bubble and
Yes. And he would just wake up like dying because it hurt. And once he burped, it sure would be fine. But I look back on that and I'm like, a couple of those little things, it took me so long to realize those little things.
Yep. Yeah.
Like, I feel like just those basic pieces of information somehow get lost.
They get lost.
I felt like I was pretty educated going in, but clearly I was not.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree. There is just not enough education around all of it in motherhood.
Yeah.
And that's why I appreciate your podcast so much.
With when you have parents that you're trying to help them navigate nighttime, and obviously the kid, the baby needs to eat. And let's say baby falls asleep on the boob. Do you have recommendations of like, okay, this is how we get through the feeding to make sure that they get enough to eat, that they get burped, that they get changed, like, that they stay alert.
Yeah.
So that they get enough to get that next patch of sleep. Like, what are your thoughts as far as that goes?
Yeah. So a baby that's, their MO is to automatic like nurse for a couple minutes and then fall asleep on the boob. I am teaching parents how to keep them awake for the feed, like stimulating, tickling their back, rubbing their armpit, just to, like, a baby can have their eyes closed and still be eating. That's that's different than them falling asleep. So kind of teaching them what the difference is, and if they need to pull them off, do a diaper change in the middle of switching between sides. I had to do that actually with my own baby. She would fall asleep after like 10 minutes of nursing on one side, which was good, but then I could not for the life of me get her latched on the other side. Oh. So I if she woke up, I would skip the diaper change. We would start on one side. If she was getting super drowsy and falling asleep, then I would do the diaper change in the middle of switching between breasts, and she would obviously wake back up. And we'd kind of start again with the next side. So I think diaper changes can be a huge tool in helping wake them up, or even burping. Burping is a huge one. I like to teach parents how to burp with their baby on their lap instead of up on their shoulder. You can kind of like support their chin and head with one hand, and then you're burping with the other while they're actually sitting on your lap. And you can do a lot of back stimulation, which wakes a baby up. That's exactly how we stimulate a baby after a vaginal and C-section delivery, so a baby can start breathing. So stimulating a baby by rubbing their back can be a great way to wake that baby back up so they can finish eating. Because one of the biggest, most important things is getting a good full feeding, no matter what time of day it is, so your baby can get a better stretch of sleep, whether that's for nap time or nighttime stretch of sleep. So that's a huge deal. Snacking is not good. Your baby, obviously, like, we do a lot of education between what snacking is versus what a good full feeding is as well.
Yeah, I'm thinking of a picture that my husband took. It went, and this was the first couple of weeks we were home with my daughter. Every time she latched, I would just fall asleep.
Yeah.
It was literally like this. It's all the crazy hormones and that kind of stuff. And it would happen in the hospital too.
Oh my
and
God.
You're like, of course you're not supposed to like hold your baby if you're going to fall asleep. And I'm like, I wasn't sleeping. Totally was sleeping. So my husband has this great picture of my daughter and I just like totally passed out.
Oh my gosh. I love
But yeah, we figured that out with her. We very similar burping to what you're talking about. I had her supported on the chin, patting on the back, but she was bouncing on my knee. So we had that extra little bit of mobility to get that pressure out. And I used to joke around. I was like, oh, maybe if I had a third, I'd have this all figured out, but I'm totally not tempting fate there. But so kind of looking ahead a little bit, because I feel like moms kind of get in the weeds and, you know, you have these changes, these bumps, the growing weeks or the learning ones or whenever they start to change patterns. Like, when do you start to see one, kind of what does that first sort of nap pattern look like? And then as moms are looking ahead, because, you know, we project that our, you know, till the kids are 16, oh my God, are they going to nap every 2 hours? Are we ever going to get out of the house? Like, what is that pattern? What do we want it to look like? And then generally from a nap perspective, like, how old are kids when they're finally growing out of naps, period?
Yeah, that's a great question. I always tell, I start off by setting realistic expectations around naps. They will be the hardest thing for your baby to conquer. You won't see naps really start to consolidate around till 6 months. So those first 6 months, you're just practicing, you're giving yourself grace. I always say practice is progress with naps. As long as you're practicing every single day with those naps, your baby will get the hang of it. As far as like the progression of naps, I like to follow age appropriate wake windows, and an eat, awake, sleep schedule. So we're kind of breaking that feed to sleep association with those babies. So when they wake up from a nap, we're feeding them, we're doing some playtime, and then we're putting them to sleep. As far as like number of naps go, as early as like, I would say 3 months, you can for sure have your baby on some type of nap schedule. They might have four naps throughout the day, and then they might need a fifth cat nap to get to that 10 p.m. bedtime. And then as they get older, you're going to see them being awake a little bit longer. And that's when your wake windows are going to start lengthening. Your naps are going to be dropping. And then for toddlers, I like to, my rule of thumb is always 3 years old. 3 years old is a good place to evaluate if your kiddo really needs the nap, or if they don't. And then I always like to replace nap time with quiet time. So you're still getting that separation. Instead of completely taking out nap time and that de-stimulation time for a kid during the day is huge. You're going to have probably a better bedtime if you give your kid some time to wind down in the middle of the day, because they're just go, go, go all day long. And it's going to be harder at bedtime. So I would say 3 years old is a good place to evaluate if your kid still needs a nap or not. And if they do until 4 years old, that's totally fine.
First of all, you're very lucky.
Yes, you're very lucky. Take advantage of that hour or two that you're getting in the middle of the day. Yeah. It's just harder, I think, when we get into the school age, like you're starting kindergarten.
Oh, yeah.
Your kid's not going to be able to take a nap during the day. So that 3 years old is a good place, a good rule of thumb place to start.
Yeah. And I think all this too, it's different for everybody in that, like our experience, I was, working a couple of days a week. I was home a couple of days a week. I prayed to God that my son would take a nap when I was pregnant with my daughter. I was like, I need a nap. I don't care if you do, but I will literally lay down on your floor so that I can get a nap. So I had a lot of those, but the other piece of advice I always give too, is if your kid is going to daycare, let those people do their magic and do like duplicate it at home. Like let those people do their magic, and then keep that, whatever they teach your kid, keep that on the weekends as much as possible, because those people are freaking amazing. We didn't have that, but like, I think that's where it's hard too. Cause you've got some kids that like somebody else sleep trained their kid. They've done it for a million times and you know, and you're like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. But then I also remember too, my son was in preschool. I think he was like, God, he must've been 3.5, 4. And preschool was over at 1:00. And that's when my daughter was like 1:00, and she was supposed to go down for a nap right around that time. So the key was like trying to keep her awake till I got him, picked him up and got him home. And then I could put him down, cause I didn't want to carry her asleep and so on. And so one day pick him up, we're driving home. It's not that far. Ooh, someone's awake.
Yeah. Awake.
not that far home. And my son, he's like, Analia is not taking a nap. We're going to play. And she's like barely like 1.5, maybe at this point. And she's like, no nap. And I was like, oh shit. And that was the end of it. Yeah. And that was their first time that they collaborated to overthrow the power in our house. And I knew I was screwed. And so like second kid, sometimes you get what you get.
Yes. You got to let the chips fall where they may.
Yeah. So understanding, we will delegate out when possible, but sometimes it's not up to us.
right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes you just got to go with the flow, and that's okay.
All right. At the end of every episode, we ask everybody a bunch of questions. And since you have survived your first year, first of all, congratulations.
Yes. Thank you.
it's more, the first birthday is more for the parents than I think it is for the kids.
Oh, 100%.
We had my oldest, I tell the story, it was in a bar. We had it from 11 to 1. The owner of the bar was a college friend of my husband. He's like, look, just be out by 2, because people don't want to know the consequences of their actions. And I was like, yes. Yes.
I love that. That's funny.
All right. Don't know if you're doing anything, but like book you're reading or podcast you're listening to right now.
Of course, I'm listening to your podcast. I don't have a ton of time to read a whole lot of books right now. I haven't been a huge book reader. Except for when I had to in school. But I also, I'm listening to, you know, some sleep consultant podcasts, Jane Haven's Becoming a Sleep Consultant. And then I have a business coach. So of course I listen to her.
We all listen to business stuff.
Yes, yes. I listen to her Ambitious Coach. So those are probably the top three that I'm listening to right now.
Awesome. I will give you a tip. Audiobooks I have found this year, and it is life-altering.
No, so many girls at work tell me to do the audiobook because we have a book club at work. And I'm like, I don't have time to sit down and read a book, but I have over an hour drive to and from work. So I'm like, I need to get into the audiobooks for sure. Yep.
Okay. Well, when you pick one, you let us know what your first one is.
Yes, I will. Yep.
All right. What's the favorite activity since becoming a mom?
Oh gosh. Probably our daily stroller walks. That just getting outside and getting that fresh air probably has become one of my favorite things for sure.
Yeah. And then how do you do that in the snow, by the way?
If the sidewalks aren't clear, we can't really do it. I might put her in the backpack and just bundle her up. But yeah, I feel like my stroller that I have is pretty, we put it in four-wheel drive and we just go.
Oh, I live in the wrong place. Live in the right. I'm originally from upstate New York. So like snow, I love it's my friend. I've been in DC over 20 years and we could use some. Okay. One piece of advice for new moms.
I would say give yourself grace.
Everyone says that.
There's so much out there saying you should do this, you should do that, don't do this, don't do that. You know what's best for your baby. You are the mom of your baby for a reason. And if you have a different way of doing something, embrace that. And if it's working for you, embrace it.
I love that you've learned that at 1 year because I wish I had learned that. Who's somebody in your space that we should know about? Like who's filling your cup up right now?
Oh, gosh. I would say I recently came across an Instagram and the stupid, you know, Instagram algorithm, you know, like if you're liking someone more, they show it up more.
Right.
And if you don't, they kind of disappear. She kind of
what does Zuckerberg think you should like?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. She kind of popped back up on my Instagram recently. Her name is, she's a little bit of an influencer, I would say. She has a big following, but she's amazing. Super down to earth. Her name is Lindsay Gurk, G-U-R-K. She has like a super just great perspective on life and postpartum and being a mom. I don't know if you've ever heard the term get your pink back, like the with the flamingos. Mm-mm. She didn't coin the term, but she kind of brought it back to life. She did some research. I don't know if she just loves flamingos, but she did some research on flamingos and found out that, mother flamingos lose their pink. So like if you see like a white gray flamingo, those are usually the moms because they're caring for their young. So, and she kind of translated that we give so much to our kids that we kind of lose who we are. We kind of lose our coloring, but then once our kids will get a little bit older, we start getting our coloring back. So her kind of motto is get your pink back. So I just love that. I really gravitated towards it. So I think it's a great message for all moms out there.
Nice. And if you want to know more about flamingos, there's actually a really cool National Geographic series on Disney Plus that just came out about journeys. Where they track the migration of different animals across the globe, and they do look at flamingos. So if you want to know more about flamingos, Disney Plus.
Awesome.
I am a plethora of information. Okay. And then for you, finally, what does it mean to you to be an active mom in postpartum?
Totally. I think it's more so my mental health and being like showing up. If I'm able to be active, I'm a better person. I can show up better for not just only my kids, but for my husband and the rest of my family. So I think that's probably the most important thing is being an active mom in postpartum for me.
Love it. Love it. Yeah. And ironically, the guest I'm interviewing after you is a psychiatrist. So,
Oh my gosh.
Oh yeah. No, mental health. It's a thing.
Yes.
Lexi Thompson, thank you so much for being on the show. If you want to find out about more about sleep coaching, and, you know, chat with Lexi. You can find her on Instagram, Lexi_thebabysleepcoach. She's over on Instagram. Lexi, again, congrats on getting through that first year.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for sharing all your know-how on the show.
Yes. Thank you so much, Carrie. It was fun.
Did you enjoy the podcast? If so, leave us a 5-star review on iTunes and tell a friend to do the same. Are you a postpartum mom or postpartum pro wanting to know more about getting back to running after baby? Check out all my free goodies on carriepagliano.com. This podcast represents the opinions of Dr. Carrie Pagliano and her guests to the show. The content should not be taken as medical advice and is for entertainment purposes only. Always consult your healthcare professional for any medical questions.